بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله everyone and it's a pleasure to be here again in the month of Rajab and inshallah in Sha'ban and have a very good read together of this book which is one of the most important books of ethics in the world of Islam, actually. Not only in the Shi'i world, in the world of Islam, one of the best books of ethics. Now, as I'm going to closely follow the text, I strongly recommend that you buy the book. And because in many instances, I just refer you to the book to read for yourself. I'm not going to, for example, read all the traditions which are in the book. I'm not going to read all the sections or cover all the sections. So in many cases, you just have to read the book yourself and it will be very, very useful. And I don't know if it's possible to have the book now for those who want the book, because even today we would need the book for reference. However, I mean, next week would be probably a more feasible time for getting the book for those of you who want to have the book. Now, a little bit about the book. It's a translation of Al-Mahasin fi Haqa'iq al-Akhlaq. That is the beauties in the Al-Mahasin fi makarim al-akhlaq, the beauties in the noble traits. And this is the last book written by Feyz Kashani. I will explain shortly who Feyz Kashani was. And he lived for 83 years. And this book was written in the last year of his life. So it is the summary of all his say 70 years of exploration in akhlaq and irfan, and all these we have just the sort of juice of his life and his understanding in this book. The book covers theoretical and practical ethics, and it is a condensed version of Al-Mahajjatul Bayda. Now, those of you who are familiar with Feyz Kashani, you know that one of his most famous books is Al-Mahajjatul Bayda fi Ihya al-Ihya, the bright path in the revival of Ihya ulumuddin of Ghazali. Ghazali has written a very good book in ethics and spirituality, which is Ihya ulumuddin. Various volumes, and then he summarized that in 8 volumes, and this one volume, which has become very thick in English, but in Arabic is quite a thin book. This is actually the gist of that Mahajjatul Bayda, and in this book he actually mentions only those things which are very important for anyone who wants to have a good ethical conduct in the life. He will explain, we will see, he will explain that akhlaq or ethics is not something sought for itself. It is something sought for ma'rifah, for insightful knowledge. And if you put in practice what is in this book, then, inshallah, Allah will enlighten your heart with a knowledge which is intrinsically different from the knowledge that we learn in universities or read in books or hear from the people. And very interestingly, we'll go through it. He says that after practicing what is in this book, you will realize that what you just know as words, you would realize that you have a knowledge of them. And having heard of things and knowing them by words, Like, for example, Tawheed. We know Tawheed by word. Tawheed means Allah is one. But that is just a sort of verbal definition of Tawheed. It's not a knowledge of Tawheed. Knowledge is something which is illuminated in the heart after the heart is purified by practicing what is inside this book, ethics, and also secrets of the worships, ibadat. And therefore, he has not written this book just for theoretical ethics. He has written this as something that should be practiced. Anyone who is willing to have insightful knowledge about God, and that is ma'rifah, then by practicing this ethics which he gets from A'imma alayhimus salam, they can, inshallah, succeed to have this light illuminated in their hearts. Now, who was Feyza Kashani? Feyza Kashani was a polymath who lived in 11th century of Islamic era, that is 16th century of Christian calendar. And he was one of the most outstanding scholars of the time of Safavid. He was a student of Muhammad Taqi Majlisi, the father, and a teacher of Allama Majlisi, who was the author of Baharul Anwar, Majlisi the son. Of course, when you say Majlisi, we mean Majlisi the son, not Majlisi the father. Majlisi the son is Allama Majlisi. He was a teacher of Allama Majlisi. And also, he was a student of Mullah Sadra. And not only his student, but his son-in-law. And one of those who actually was quite loyal to him when Mullah Sadra was deported to Qom. Of course, that at that time, Qom was a place for deportation. It was not a place for knowledge. Qom was not a hawza at the time when Mullah Sadra was deported to Qom. Of course, a village close by to Qom, Kahak. And 8 years that he was deported there because of teaching philosophy, Feyz Kashani was with him. And actually, the title Feyz, which means grace, was given to him by Mullah Sadra. Mullah Sadra had two son-in-laws, and both of them, one was a very famous philosopher, and the other one was this Feyz Kashani, a famous muhaddith and exegete. He did not regard himself as a philosopher, although he knew philosophy very well, but was not very much fond of philosophy. And he was called Feyz, and his other son-in-law, he called him Fayyaz, the most graceful. And Feyz Kashani was Feyz. Although he was very loyal to his father-in-law, Mullah Sadra, however, he did not like his method of philosophy and talking about God the way philosophers talk about God. Although he was very, very well versed in philosophy, he doesn't use philosophical terms. For example, in philosophy, they say Allah, cause, but he says sabab. Again, so cause is sabab, but it's used in the Quran, but in philosophy, they don't use it. And he was very accurate in using the Quranic terms. For example, in Islamic terminology, we have Ya Musabbib al Asbab, or the one who makes all the causes. Now, we never say in our hadith that Ya Illatul Ilal. Illatul Ilal, again, means the cause of all the causes, but it's a philosophical term rather than an Islamic term. He was a person like that. And he was born in Kashan. Kashan is between Qom and Isfahan. And from Kashan, he moved to Isfahan to learn jurisprudence and other sciences. And then from there, he went to Shiraz to learn from a famous muhaddith who had just arrived in Shiraz, Bahrani. However, after returning to Isfahan, he met Mullah Sadra and he became his student and then his son-in-law. his teachers in hadith was Muhammad Taqi Majlisi, Majlisi the father, as I mentioned. In fiqh, Shaykh Baha'i, very famous Shaykh Baha'i, of course, the sort of polymath of the Islamic knowledge. And in philosophy, his teachers were, of course, Mullah Sadra, Mir Damad, and Mir Fendereski. And he moved to Shiraz to learn hadith, as I said, under Sayyid Majid Bahrani, and then came back to Isfahan, learned philosophy under Mullah Sadra. When Mullah Sadra was deported to Qom, he went there, and then he came back to Isfahan again and became the Jummah prayer leader in Isfahan, which was a very, very important post at the time of Safavids. And in the last phase of his life, he went back to Kashan and died there. Now, he actually has written in every field of Islamic knowledge. In tafsir, he has written Tafsir al-Safi, and two very important aspects of this great man who is lying in rest in Kashan is that, first of all, although he was very much interested and strongly attached to the teachings of A'imma alayhimus salam and hadith of A'imma, he was very ecumenical, and he used to have good relations with Sunni scholars, and also especially the Sunni scholars of the past. He liked them very much, some of them. And therefore, for example, his tafsir as-Safi, he used the tafsir of Baydawi, who was a Sunni exegete, as his base, and added the traditions of A'imma alayhimus salam to it and became Tafsir al-Safi. This was one method. The other method, any book he wrote a summary of it as well. And therefore, Tafsir al-Safi, he wrote a summary of it as Al-Asfa. In Hadith, he wrote Al-Wafi, one of the greatest books of the later centuries. And then he wrote a summary of it as Shafi. Of course, those who are familiar with the knowledge of science of Hadith know the importance of Al-Wafi, which is not less than Baharul Anwar, if not more than Baharul Anwar. In Akhlaq, he wrote Al-Mahajjatul Bayza, which is based on the book of Ghazali, again a Sunni scholar. He refined the book and he added the ahadith of A'imma to the book. He was of the idea that although, for example, these people were Sunni scholars, however, some of them really were quite well-versed in Islamic knowledge. The only deficiency they had was that they didn't have the knowledge of A'imma alayhi wasalam. And he thought that by adding the knowledge of A'imma, the ahadith of A'imma, to their work, he will actually create something spectacular, as he did. I mean, Mahajjatul Bayza is a spectacular book. And Allama Tawatabai Rahmatullah Alayhi used to say that if anyone wants to read a book of akhlaq, and a detailed book of akhlaq, we don't have anything better than Mahajjatul Bayza. And then he summarized that Mahajjatul Bayza in this book, the Al-Haqa'iq fi Mahasin al-Akhlaq. Al-Haqa'iq, the realities in the beauties of Akhlaq. Then theology, he wrote Usul al-Ma'arif. In fiqh, he wrote a couple of books, Mu'tasam al-Shi'a. In Irfan, he wrote many books because he was really an Arif. However, he didn't like the method of the Sufis. I will talk about that later on. As soon as we talk about Urafa, we somehow confuse them with the Sufis. He's very much against the Sufi methods. Although he was very well versed in the Irfan of Ibn Arabi, which was, of course, the highest theoretical Irfan for his teacher Mullah Sadra, but he was very much against it. He liked Irfan of Ghazali more than Irfan of Ibn Arabi. However, what he disliked about Ghazali and criticized him very much, especially in Mahajjatul Bayza, he criticized him very much, was that he had Sufi inclination. believing that you have to have a sheikh and you have to blindfoldedly follow a sheikh or a peer or someone like that, and believing in all those mythical stories about the Sufis. For example, some of the Sufis prayed their Salatul Fajr for 50 years with the wudu of Salatul Isha. He criticizes, what stories are these? Even if they didn't sleep, they want to say they didn't sleep, okay? They didn't sleep, they were all having worship during the night. Even if they didn't sleep, it was good to renew their wudu for Salatul Fajr rather than just praying their Salatul Fajr with the wudu of Salatul Isha. He criticizes these mythical things about the Sufis and also criticizes the idea of sheikh or peer. And he says, in Sufism, the mistake they have made is that they have actually, because the Sufis have the main body of their understanding of depth of knowledge from A'imma alayhi wassalam, they have replaced the imam with the sheikh. And he says the only sheikh that we follow is the imam. We don't have any other sheikh. We don't blindfoldedly follow anyone else except the imam alayhi wassalam. And the shuyukh that the Sufis say for us are only a'imma and no one else. So this was his method in that. And I think I covered all that. I should mention here. And now this book is a very concise book about how we can polish our heart to make it ready to receive the ma'rifah. He says ma'rifah is not something that you can learn from anyone. It is not something that a teacher can teach you. It is a light which comes to the heart, and the only person which puts that light in your heart is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The only thing that you can learn from teachers and from the books is how to polish your heart to get that high category of knowledge. Now, look, well, I cannot say look at the preface, but because you don't have the book now. But in the preface, I think you have to buy this book, although it's a bit expensive, but it doesn't matter. Because I'm going to sometimes read from the different paragraphs of the book. He says that with the help of Allah in this book, I will relate some of the secrets of religion. So religion is not just a superficial sort of surface that we see or hear. Everything that we see here or hear or read in the Quran or have in our ibadat, there is a secret beneath it. And he says that I'm going to reveal some of those secrets. Through them, whoever has a heart or a heedful ear will ascend and behold the steps of certainty. So this is the objective of the book. Of course, the book would not benefit anyone unless they have a heart. And by having a heart, of course, all of us have hearts. However, a heart which is alive and which can hear and see. I have taken these, whatever I say in this book, I have taken these from the book of Allah, the sunnah of the master of the messengers, and the narrations of the immaculate imams. I have also added what I found appropriate in the scholars' books, especially in Ihya Ulumuddin of Abu Hamid Muhammad ibn Muhammad al-Ghazali. He was very much fond of Ghazali, and even in this very concise book, he says that apart from the Quran, ahadith of Prophet and A'imma, I have taken some of the words of Ghazali. Why? Because he believes that Ghazali was one of those enlightened with the light of Ma'rifah. And he believed that towards the end of his life, Ghazali became a Shia. This is what he believes. al-Ghazali towards the end of his life, because of the enlightenment of his heart, he became a Shia. And that's why in Mahajjatul Bayza, whenever he speaks about Ghazali, he says, قَالَ أَبُو حَامِدْ رَحِمَهُ اللَّهِ. May God have mercy on him. And very respectfully speaks of Ghazali, although he criticizes very harshly as well. I mean, in those areas where he talks about the myths of Sufis and such things, he criticizes him very strongly. However, he believes that Ghazali had really arrived at the destination of Ma'rifah. And I think for anyone who has read the books of Ghazali in Arabic, the words of Ghazali himself. For example, when you go through Mahajjatul Bayza, in which he brings excerpts from Ihya Ulumuddin of Ghazali, and then he expounds and explains and brings ahadith of Ayyam alayhi salam in confirmation of what Ghazali says, you see that the text of Ghazali has a very strong influence on the heart. And this shows that he himself was someone who had found the ma'rifah. Although initially he was a Sunni, and according to Faiz Kashani, towards the end of his life, he found the ma'rifah of A'imma alayhi salam. However, in Ihya Ulumuddin, he doesn't bring a hadith of A'imma because he still is not in light of knowing A'imma alayhi salam. But Allah had enlightened his heart. So he says, I bring some of the works of scholars. I've added what I found appropriate in the scholars' books, especially in Ihya Ulumuddin of Abu Hamid Muhammad ibn Muhammad al-Ghazali at-Tusi, in a fit explanation of its principles and meanings. I have carefully selected its precious gems, without including anything unnecessary. As I said, this is the gist and the juice of his life, the book. So he has only included anything which is important for someone who is a seeker of ma'rifah. I have named it Al-Haqa'iq, the realities or the secrets, and have arranged it in six treatises. Now, the six chapters of the book, just to give you, to put you in light, what we are going to see in this book. Of course, this book I have arranged in other places to teach in four seasons of 10 sessions each season. So the book, inshallah, I will cover in other places in 40 sessions. So four seasons, 10 sessions each season. And inshallah, the book will be completed. It's about 600 pages. However, since we have a shorter term here, a shorter season, I will try to somehow squeeze the first season into five sessions, and if then there is an interest and people would like, we can continue with other seasons here as well. If not, I'm teaching the other seasons at the Islamic Center as well, so you may join there later on, inshallah, if you wish. Anyhow, what is what he says as the contents of the book? The book is arranged in six treatises, and the first treatise talks about knowledge, the importance of knowledge, and what knowledge is useful and we have to learn, what knowledge is necessary for everyone to know about, and what knowledge is just a sort of noble addition to one's life. And at the end of this first chapter, he talks about self-knowledge, knowledge of our own souls. What are the faculties of human soul? We have to know it, and how we have to actually put them in work. The second treatise talks about character. Can character be changed? Human character. Because the whole knowledge of akhlaq deals with human character. So can character be changed at all? And of course, he argues that yes, of course, human character, no matter how evil it is, it can be changed. It just needs a decision, that we decide that we want to change our character. He's very much against the deterministic sort of view of human being, that everyone acts on the drive of their environment or their background, their family. Although all these are important, however, human being has that capability to change his own character. And then he talks about how we can shape our character and what are the sources of ill traits in our character. The ill traits in our character, the sources he identifies, and then he pinpoints how we can get rid of them if we want. The knowledge of akhlaq is all about our own free will to decide what we want to do. And then after talking about the ill character, of course, talking about ill character is not the main purpose of the book. The main purpose of the book is that after getting rid of ill characters from our heart, how can we replace them with good characters, characteristics, good characteristics? How can we replace them with them? And how can we replenish our heart with something which attracts the angels? Because it's through the angels that we receive ma'rifatullah. The angels would just run away from an evil heart. He brings a very beautiful hadith. You have probably heard that the angels would never enter a house in which there is a dog. Have you heard this? You have heard this. And he says, of course, you shouldn't take this literally. The house is the heart. The dog is the ill character. The angels never enter a heart in which there is an ill character. And therefore, how we can attract angels to the heart, and through the angels come the knowledge, the ma'rifah of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So, in the third chapter, he talks about the relationship of man with this world, how we should we organize our lives in this world, what should be our relationship. And then in the fourth, fifth, and the sixth chapter, he talks about those good characteristics that shape a good character, in which from which, of course, comes the ma'rifatullah. Ma'rifatullah cannot come to a heart unless the heart is ready for it. And the readiness of the heart is, first of all, it should be clean of evil, and secondly, it should have been furnished by good traits, and then, of course, ma'rifatullah comes in. It comes through the angels, the angels enter, and then the ma'rifatullah comes. Very beautiful line of Hafez, Div chobirun ravat fereshte darayad, when evil goes out, the angel comes in. It's one of the famous poetries of Hafez, and it's really like that. When demon or devil leaves the heart, the angel comes in. Devils and angels cannot go together in one place. So it's all about that. Now, the first chapter, he says that that Allah created the celestial and earthly realms for the sake of knowledge. The best way to come nearer to Allah is through knowledge. And actually, knowledge is the ultimate aim of our creation. Now, of course, in the Quran we have وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لَيَعْبُدُونَ. I have not created jinn and ins but to worship me. And of course, worshipping God is the means to knowing Him. And therefore, Allah has not created jinn and ins but to know Him. And knowing Him means that you get close to Him, you get all the blessings, you get whatever Allah has, actually He shares with you, without, of course, Him losing anything. He shares everything with you without Him losing or anything reduced from His grace or His bounties. However, all this is only possible through knowledge. And therefore, knowledge is the ultimate aim. He mentions several verses here, and also a hadith he mentions that al-ulama warathatul anbiya, the scholars, the knowledgeable, are the heirs of the prophets, in that they have the ma'rifah. Of course, by scholars, we don't mean scholars of scholastic or university studies. Scholars of that ma'rifah or knowledge which comes in the heart, they are the heirs of the prophets. And of course, the prime example of these ulama are the A'imma alayhimus salam. They are the prime example because they have the ma'rifah and they are the heirs of the Prophet, peace be on him. Otherwise, an alim who doesn't have ma'rifah of Allah has no value. Even, of course, they are worse than the ordinary lay people who don't have that knowledge which they have learnt in the books. And also, the hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam, he mentions. The good thing about this book is that it has all the ahadith in Arabic with the translation. So anyone who wants to have the Arabic version of the hadith and memorize them, because these are very beautiful ahadith he has chosen, it's all there in the book. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Inna talab al-ilm awjabu alaykum min talab al-mal." Seeking knowledge is more necessary for you than seeking wealth. Of course, most of us think that seeking wealth is more necessary. I don't know, in Iran, in high school, one of the topics that we had in the classes of literature was, which one is better, knowledge or wealth? I don't know whether you had it here or not. And usually, of course, everyone wrote, knowledge is better, but they didn't really believe in that. They thought that, yes, of course, wealth and money is better than knowledge. But anyhow, it was the sort of fashion that everyone should write, knowledge is better. Now here, of course, by that knowledge, of course, we mean the knowledge which is related to knowing God. Talab al-ilm, inna talab al-ilm awjabu alaykum min talab al-mal. Why? Inna al-mal maqsumun mazmunun lakum. Money, wealth, is something which has already been given to you by Allah, distributed based on your share. And wasayafi lakum, it will come to you, although we don't have patience. We want all of it at the beginning of our life. But Allah knows at what time, what should we gain. Of course, something that he has destined for us, we have to work for it. But work for it not in the sense thinking that this is the ultimate goal of life. But knowledge is not something destined for you. Knowledge is something that you have to gain. It's very important. It's just like akhira and dunya. Dunya is something distinct for us. Akhira is not. Akhira is something that we have to gain ourselves. And unfortunately, I know that most of us do not believe in these things, because the Quran says repeatedly, maybe more than anything else, the Quran has repeated, إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَبْسُطُ الرِّزْقَ لِمَنْ يَشَاءُ وَيَقْدِرُ. It's God who expands the rest or tightens the rest for anyone he wishes. But of course, we don't believe in it. Although it's in the Quran, but we cannot believe in it because it's different from the type of mindset that we have in this life. And what the Quran says is that what is not destined for you and what is not already written for you is your a'mal. It is, and usually we say all our a'mal, we say it's, oh, God wished it, God wanted it to happen. However, about wealth, we say that we have to go and get it. Anyhow, Imam here, alayhi salam, says that, وَالْعِلْمُ مَخْزُونٌ عِنْدَ أَهْلِهِ وَقَدْ أُمِرْتُمْ بِطَلَبِهِ. Ilm is kept with its owners, possessors, and you have been commanded to go and get it. Remember the story of Musa and Khizr? Musa wanted some knowledge, and Allah said, I'm not going to give you this knowledge like that. Go and get it. Where? There is someone, you have to go and find him. Where? You have to travel for several weeks to find that person, and that person, of course, will say, no, I don't want to teach you. You shouldn't come accompany me. You cannot learn and all these things. However, you have to insist and learn it from him. The other hadith that he mentions, لَوْ يَعْلَمُ النَّاسِ مَا بِهِ تَلَبِ الْعِلْمِ لَطَلَبُوهُ وَلَوْ بِصَفْكِ الْمُحَجِ وَخَوْضِ الْلُجَجِ. If people knew what was in the quest for knowledge, they would engage in that quest by any means, be it at the risk of their lives or by delving into the depths of the oceans, if they knew what is in knowledge. And again, by knowledge, we don't mean science, we don't mean theology, we don't mean fiqh, we mean the ma'rifah which comes in the heart of the people. And this very famous hadith, talabul ilm faridatun ala kulli muslim wa muslimah. Learning, seeking knowledge is a compulsion, is an obligation on every Muslim man and woman. This is, of course, spiritual knowledge. Okay, beautiful traditions. I just mentioned a couple of them here. You have to read it. I mean, this book is a gem. This book is something which is a selection of what Feyz-e Kashani had gone through all his life, the 70 years of investigation. He has put actually the juice of it here for us. Now, the other section he talks here is about the virtue of knowledge. Very interesting analysis he makes. He says that in this world, things fall into three, precious things fall into three categories. Now, there are things which are sought for themselves and they have intrinsic value. Then there are those which are sought not for themselves, that means they don't have intrinsic value, but they are sought for their usefulness. They are useful, but they don't have intrinsic value. And there are things which are both useful and have intrinsic value. So, three categories of different things. There are things which have intrinsic value, things which don't have intrinsic value but are useful, and things which are both, have both intrinsic value and are useful. Okay, those things which have intrinsic value. What do you think has an intrinsic value? Don't mention knowledge now, later. Anything with... Diamonds are useful. No, they don't have intrinsic value, actually. They are useful. Yeah, you can buy things with them. They are useful, just like currency. It's useful, okay?
That's number two.
Yes. Food. They are useful. But what you get from food is more important. That's what health, and especially pleasure. Pleasure has intrinsic value, isn't it? You seek pleasure for itself, not for anything else. So pleasure has intrinsic value. Money, currency, gold, these things have usefulness. They don't have intrinsic value. Now, something which has both intrinsic value, that means it gives you pleasure, and are useful. What are them? For example, something, can you imagine? Yes, knowledge, of course. I said don't mention knowledge now, of course. That's quite obvious. Yes?
Action.
What action, of course?
I guess good action, because it has intrinsic value, and that it gives you pleasure, that's also useful for...
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Ibadat.
Ibadat are useful. Some of the ibadat don't have intrinsic value. They give you something there. They're means, of course. But health. Health is both useful and has intrinsic value. Because health gives you pleasure. And it's useful because if you are healthy, you can do other things as well. And he mentions all these things to say that knowledge falls in the third category. Knowledge gives you pleasure, first of all. Knowing something gives you pleasure. And by knowledge, you can attain... Of course, what is important for him is not technology, facilities, and such things. What is important for him is that you can attain closeness to God by knowledge. And closeness to God, of course, brings many other blessings for you. So knowledge is of those things which have both intrinsic value and are useful. And are sought for themselves and for other things. And also, a thing's worth is recognized by the quality of its fruits. And if we look at the fruits of knowledge, fruits of ma'rifah, we can see that it's innumerable. And therefore, it's very important that we realize the importance of learning knowledge in our life. And then different types of knowledge vary in their ranking. I mean, we have worldly knowledge, we have spiritual knowledge, we have knowledge which leads to our better understanding of this world, we have knowledge which leads to technology, and we have useless knowledge as well, isn't it? Many useless knowledge. I mean, for example, how to play cards. That's a knowledge, of course, but it's quite useless and harmful. Sometimes knowledge is harmful. Anyhow, the highest, the value of knowledge is determined by the value of the subject about which the knowledge talks. And therefore, the highest knowledge is what? Knowledge of God. Not knowledge of creation, but knowledge of God himself. And this is why he brings a hadith, لَوْ يَعْلَمُ النَّاسِ. This is a hadith from Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam. لَوْ يَعْلَمُ النَّاسِ مَا فِي فَضْلِ مَعْرِفَةِ اللَّهِ مَا مَدُّ أَعْيُنَهُمْ إِلَى مَا مُتَّعَ بِهِ الْأَعْدَاءِ. If people knew the virtue of recognition of Allah, or knowledge of Allah, they would never gaze at the splendor and blessings of the life of this world that Allah has granted his enemies. Ah, it's very interesting that Allah grants this world to his enemies and to his friends in the same way. That means it's not important. But ma'rifah, he only grants to his friends. The enemies are absolutely deprived of that ma'rifah. Okay, after dividing the knowledge into worldly knowledge and spiritual knowledge, he says that spiritual knowledge in itself are of two types. Now we are starting to actually come to a definition of ilmul akhlaq. Spiritual knowledge is of two types. A knowledge which is sought for itself. Spiritual knowledge. Some spiritual knowledge are those types of knowledge which are sought for themselves. And some spiritual knowledge are not sought for themselves, but are sought to be put in practice to get that knowledge which is sought for itself. Okay, you have to read this. Is that clear? No. Did anyone understand what I said? No. Good. Sorry? you made it more difficult.
Okay, I think now I understand.
Yes?
So the first kind is, okay, I know about it. That's it. I know. This car is nice. I know about it. But the second part is, when I know knowledge, so that I can practice on that knowledge that I have sought.
Almost, but we are not talking about knowledge, worldly knowledge, about cars and these things. What about spiritual knowledge? Spiritual knowledge. You see, some spiritual knowledge are sought for itself, like ma'rifatullah. You are seeking a light in your heart which enlightens all these concepts that we hear on the pulpit. Allah, hereafter, Prophet, knowledge of the Prophet, knowledge of Imam. We hear about them, but we are not in light about them. Mostly we are in dark about them. Okay? What is Sirat? What is Mizan? Why do we die? Why do we come to this world? What was the meaning of the sin of Adam alayhi salam? Or how the angels speak to the prophets? We hear about all these things. Okay? But we have no true knowledge of them. Our knowledge is just words, definitions. Now, we seek to know about them. That means when a light comes to the heart, all these are would become clarified for us. This knowledge is sought for itself. لَيْسَ الْعِلْمِ. You remember that hadith of Unwan Basri? Ya Abu Abdullah, لَيْسَ الْعِلْمِ بِالتَّعَلُّمِ. Knowledge is not something that you can learn from people. وَلَكِنَّهُ نُورٌ يَقْذِفُهُ اللَّهُ فِي قَلْبِ مَنْ يَشَاءُ. It's a light that Allah throws in the heart of whoever He wishes. This is the knowledge, a spiritual knowledge, sought for itself. This is what we want, ma'rifatullah. However, how are we going to get this ma'rifatullah, get this light? How this light would come to us? Now, we have to practice certain things, okay? First of all, you have to practice your worships. You have to know about fiqh. How I should pray? How should I fast? How should I perform Hajj? You have to do all these things. Okay, this is also a spiritual knowledge. But do you seek this spiritual knowledge for itself? No. You seek it to put it to practice so that you get that light in your heart, to get ma'rifatullah. Okay? What about akhlaq? Ilmul akhlaq. For example, knowing about the traits of the heart, qualities of the heart, the evils that we have to avoid, the goods that we have to bring in our heart, in our personality. Is it sought for itself? No. It's not sought for itself. We learn about all these to put them in practice so that our heart is ready to receive what? That light, ma'rifatullah. So, that light or ma'rifah is the spiritual knowledge sought for itself. And fiqh and akhlaq are branches of spiritual knowledge which are sought for that knowledge which is sought for itself. Is that clear now? Okay, that's now clear. This is what he says. Let me read what it says. Spiritual knowledge is divided into two types. Knowledge which is sought for its own sake, and knowledge which is sought in order to be put into practice in order to attain the first type of spiritual knowledge. If spiritual knowledge is sought for worldly reason, then it becomes worldly knowledge. Clear. For example, you want a spiritual knowledge to have some power to read people's mind. It's worldly knowledge. It's not a spiritual knowledge anymore. It's worldly knowledge. It's not ma'rifah. It doesn't bring ma'rifah to you. Now, spiritual knowledge that is sought for its own sake is a light that is manifested in the heart when it is purified and cleansed of all its negative attributes. With that light, one is able to perceive matters that one had previously only heard by name. This is the plight of most of us, of course. We just hear these things. We don't know really what they mean. And then many questions come to our mind about them because we are in dark about them, actually. It's good to believe in them because believing in them, of course, would eventually take us to, inshallah, paradise. But in this world, we don't have ma'rifah of them. Now, look what he says. What sort of things would become clear for us when that light shines in the heart? Doesn't Allah says, Allahu nuru samawati wal ard? Allah is the light in the heavens and the earth. Mathalu nurihi. And then the example of His light when it shines in the heart. Kamishkatin fiha misbah. It's like a niche in which there is a lamp, and the lamp is in al misbahu fi zujaja. That is the heart. That lamp, which is the light of ma'rifah, when it shines in the zujaja, in the heart, it illuminates everything. Everything would become clear for you. Nurun ala nur. Yes.
I just want the reference of the worship.
It's ayatun nur in suratun nur. Very clear. Yeah. Now, What would he learn by this light, which is sought for itself? He learns about Allah's attributes as much as possible, his acts, his wisdom in creating this world and the hereafter, and arranging them in that particular order. Why things are created in this order, we don't know. But when that ma'rifah comes, everything will become clear for us. I always say, well, God has created cockroaches that we detest very much. Well, we don't know because we are in dark. When the ma'rifah comes, we realize the place of the cockroach in the creation. And we realize the place of human being and the angels in the creation. Why angels are not like human beings? Why human beings are not like angels? These are things that we only may ask, but we don't know about them. When that light comes, you see everything in clear order, because everything is based on wisdom of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You see that wisdom through everything in the creation. Okay, what else would become clarified for us? For example, just certain examples. He attains it inner knowledge of how the angels appeared before the prophets, how revelation came to the prophet, how angels spoke to the imam, and knowledge of the dominions of the higher realms, the malakuts. He is given knowledge of the heart, how angelic and demonic forces clash in it. It becomes clear for us. Page 11. So page 11, the big paragraph. And he is given knowledge of heaven, hell, punishment in the grave, the bridge, Sirat, in the hereafter, the balance. You see, we all hear about these things, but we don't know what they are. Ma'rifah would make all these clear for us. Furthermore, page 12, the big paragraph, the first big paragraph on page 12, he understands what it means to meet Allah. Now, do we really know what does it mean to meet Allah? No. And that's why some of us say, well, it's not possible at all to meet Allah. Why? Because we don't know the meaning of meeting of Allah. When the Quran says, إِنَّكَ كَادِهُنْ إِلَىٰ رَبِّكَ كَادْحَنْ فَمُلَاقِهِ, you are going to meet your Lord. What's the meaning of it? Well, we don't know. We believe in it. That's fine. And as long as we believe in it and we act accordingly, we are safe. However, we haven't attained the true meaning of these things. And he understands what it means to attain perpetual bliss through communion with the heavenly host, Al-Mala'ul A'la, and association with the angels and the prophets. He understands the vast difference between the ranks occupied by the dwellers of paradise. Now, all these would become clear here in this world for us. That's why, for example, the prophet, peace be on him, or the imam, speak about these things as they are seeing them. They are very clear about it. Why? Because that light of ma'rifah has shone in their heart. And of course, that light may have different intensity based on different purity of the heart or different capacities. Of course, no one can ever reach that sort of extent of that light which the Prophet had in his heart. It's not possible for any human being to have it, because, of course, for certain reasons. However, when this ma'rifah comes, you would realize why the Prophet has more than you. Now we say, well, why they have more, we have less. No, when this light of ma'rifah comes, you would realize that why that is the case. Okay, now he says that, although acknowledging these matters are principles of faith, however, because we do not really know what they mean, people fall in different categories about explaining these things. For example, some people say all these are metaphors, for example. They are told so that we understand some sort of concept or idea about them. So others believe that some of these descriptions are metaphorical, while others are literal. Some say that they are all literal, for example. Some say that people make great claims to the knowledge of Allah, while others believe him to be what the common people generally consider. Now, he says that why are these confusions are there? Because ma'rifah is not there. If ma'rifah is there, then of course all these differences, discrepancies go. And I tell you, this man Faiza Kashani, was a man who had this light of Ma'rifah in his heart. And he is actually speaking out of knowledge. He's not speaking out of theory. He speaks of something that he has experienced in his heart. Now, then he says that at the end of page 12, the last paragraph, by knowledge sought for its own sake, we mean knowledge which removes ambiguity from these matters that we mentioned. Removes all ambiguity. Now, if our children ask us about these things, it's very awkward. We struggle to explain for them something that we ourselves do not understand, isn't it? We struggle to explain something that we do not know. However, when that light of Ma'rifah comes, it removes ambiguity from these matters until the truth is manifest as if seen with one's own eyes, leaving no doubt whatsoever. Now, how this can happen now? He is now explaining what is the purpose of this book. This Ma'rifah cannot be taught. But the purpose of the book is to make you ready to receive this light from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So he says that on their own, human beings could do this, could remove the ambiguities, could bring that light to their heart, had not rust resulting from the filth and impurities of this world clouded the mirror of their hearts. This is what binds us to our ambiguous sort of state that we are in. These mirrors must therefore be polished of these impurities that veil them from knowing Allah and all those things that we mentioned. And how we have to polish the mirror of the heart? This can only be done through learning, guidance over Allah, God consciousness, sagacity, and intelligence. And these sciences cannot be found in books. Only we can prepare you to receive these lies by, of course, practicing what is in this book. What is in this book is both knowledge of akhlaq and knowledge of secrets of jurisprudence. It prepares you if you put them in practice. You see, the most important thing is if you put them in practice. And putting them in practice is not something easy. For example, when it says that you have to remove arrogance from your heart, well, it's just the words. You have to remove arrogance from your heart. How to do it? It's very difficult. It's a struggle. Gradually, you have to remove arrogance. And when arrogance is removed from the heart, then and only then you see the splendor of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Otherwise, you only see your own splendor. Isn't it? And you have no splendor, actually. You're very limited, very tiny, very small. But as long as arrogance is there, you only see yourself. When you remove that, then of course you see the splendor of Allah in the world. That is very clear. It is a contradiction to think that you can have your arrogance and you can see the splendor of Allah. It's not possible. But how to remove that? That's a different question. And that is a lifelong struggle, that you have to remove that arrogance from the heart. And we have from Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam that arrogance is the last thing which leaves the heart of the believer, even on the gates of Jannah. Even on the gates of Jannah is the last thing that leaves the heart. As long as we only see ourselves, then we cannot enter paradise. And that's why the final finishing touch should be done by Allah taking that arrogance, that specks of arrogance from our hearts so that we are ready to enter paradise. I know, but I don't know about you, but yes, I know. I mean, when I see myself center of everything, and when all my attention is about my own interests in this world, that means that I am arrogant, isn't it? That I do not see the reality, I only see the illusion of myself. That's arrogance, of course, yeah. Arrogance is not only for the kings or, say, for example, the hard-hearted people. Everyone has their own arrogance in the heart. Now look at this tradition, beautiful from Nahjul Balagha. Inna min ahab ibadillahi ilayh abdan a'anahu Allah fi nafsih. O people, one of Allah's most beloved servants is the one whom Allah has empowered against his own base self. This needs help from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It really needs help. You have to cry a lot that Allah helps you to remove that arrogance from your heart, to feel your own nothingness, to feel your own humbleness and humility. It needs support from Allah. So he says, one of the most beloved of servants of God is the one whom Allah has helped to remove that against his best self, such that he is saddened inside and enveloped by fear, and the lamp of guidance has started to shine bright in his heart. That's the light of Ma'rifah. When Allah helps you to remove that arrogance, the light of Ma'rifah, he has cast off the apparel of desires and rid himself of all worries except the one that he is left with. Have we done that? Have we left all worries in this world except one worry, that is our connection to God, thinking all the time about him, and of course sometimes thinking about our worldly matters as well, sometimes. Well, we are opposite, isn't it? All our attention is about our worldly affairs. Sometimes we think about God. Well, in that case, the light of Ma'rifah does not shine. And that means what? That means that we are going to stay a long time on the Day of Judgment, so that these things are completed in us. Otherwise, of course, Allah could straight away send us to hell. No, he keeps us until we somehow develop these things that we have not developed in this world. And the other hadith, قَدْ أَحْيَا قَلْبَهُ وَأَمَاتَ نَفْسَهُ. He has revived his heart and killed his base self, such that his body has become thin and his bulk has become light. A bright luminescence shines from him and shows him the way. These are all about these people who have found this ma'rifah. Just to finish off, one very beautiful hadith at the end on page 15. Sa'alahu Kumail ibn Ziyad al-Nakhai anil haqiqah. You know Kumail, how close was he to Amir al-Mu'mineen? And he was killed because of his love to Ali. And Amir al-Mu'mineen sometimes divulged the secrets of his heart to Kumail. Now, once he asked him, what is haqiqah? What is the secret of existence? The Amir al-Mu'mineen says, ma laka wal haqiqah. What are you standing from reality of existence? You are asking something which is much beyond you. Then he said, قَالَ أَوَلَسْتُ صَاحِبَ السِّرَّكَ. Am I not the one who is given, you give me your secrets, you reveal to me your secrets? He said, قَالَ بَلَا وَلَكَنْ يُرَشَّهُ عَلَيْكَ مَا يَطْفَهُ مِنِّي. Yes, of course. However, what that which overflows from me just splashes on you. This is what ma'rifah you get. The ma'rifah, the real ma'rifah that you want, of course, you are not at that position at the moment. But of course, you hear from me talking about certain things, it enlightens your heart. What is it? What overflows from my heart of that ma'rifah just splashes on your soul, and you think that you are receiving lots of knowledge. Anyhow, we stop here, and I think just a couple of more things for next week. However, as I said, this is a precious gem. Buy the book. £27 is not important. And it is something which we have to somehow follow closely during the course. Once I tried to put slides and PowerPoints for the course, but it was very distractive. the book is much better to follow than slides and PowerPoint. So inshallah we follow the book closely. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala ta'ala. Any questions? Yes. No, we have to change ourselves. We have to change. It's we that shape our character.
Okay, say the mother is a very serious mother. His mother has 10 young children. Yeah?
Okay.
And he comes to God and says, I want to change. Is that going to be 1 year, 24 hours? Is that going to do it?
Yes, someone having reached that state is very difficult, actually, even to, we think that he ever think about changing, you see. First of all, you should start thinking about changing. And as soon as you get that urge for change, then of course things would follow. But many people don't even think that they are in a bad status. They don't even think that they have something to rectify. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Especially, this is what Ibn Sina mentions in his Maqamatul Arifin, that initially it doesn't just shine like that. It's just sort of, we get sparks of it initially. We get some sparks, for example, for a couple of seconds, couple of minutes, things become very clear, and then it goes again. Until a person continues on the way, so that then this light shines continuously in the heart. Yeah.
One last time.
Even one night may be enough, but provided we leave that arrogance of the heart. I mean, Allah will help. If someone is serious, Allah will help. Yeah, thank you.